Like, if I have to see Don Whitfield in a bathtub again with his pasty white arms, come on. Chest. Hello, Addison.
Bill, you're coming in a lot more chipper than the poor Dutton family is in the beginning of 1923.
They've been worse, but it's not terrible in Montana right now. It's just cold and dreary.
Yeah, which is brutal. You're over here like, hello. And I'm like, we are entering this way too happy for how the beginning of episode one of season two of 1923 starts out. I mean, the way that Elsa Dutton narrates everything, I'm thinking that, you know, this is the version of hell, except cold.
I'm like Elizabeth when she comes downstairs and sees the sunlight pouring through the windows. I'm like, sunshine, there you are. And then there's the mountain lion on the porch, which is coming in just a minute on the podcast, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. There's no way that it can't. So kind of setting up the scene real quick. Well, I guess no, we have trivia. This is, you know, you would think that by how many seasons of this podcast we've done, Billy, that, you know, I might remember that we do trivia at the top.
Yeah.
What's our trivia this week?
Well, I mean, of course, trivia, but real quick, bullet point some things we're going to talk about during this episode of the pod. I mean, of course, Alex has huge news. Spencer is making his way back to America. There's a trial taking place in Bozeman, and it wasn't the trial I kind of thought it was when it was presented. And then, Tiona.
I was about to say Tiona.
And her and her boyfriend's relationship has certainly progressed. Mm-hmm. Wasn't all negative in Tiona's world, which was nice. It was kind of like a nice, pleasant little day for Tiona, to say the least.
But the Reverend and his men are definitely on the prowl to find her.
They're coming, and they're terrible. Mm-hmm. They're just terrible, terrible men.
Terrible.
There's no other way to say that, but okay. Yeah, a lot to get to in an episode that really didn't have too much action, but was certainly really interesting, in my opinion.
Well, I think what it did is we did touch on, like, Elizabeth wasn't there a ton in episode one, but I think they did a good job of, we saw every single character, even Banner and Whitfield, like, we saw them.
It was a good recap, sort of reminder of where everybody was at, I think. Mm-hmm. Which was nice. I'm excited for the action for episode two. But yeah, okay. I'm ready now. Trivia, if you're ready for me.
Actually, can I say one thing before we get to trivia? The two things that I really – we're deep in Prohibition, which I think is just really interesting to see play out. And then two, I love that we're starting to see the invention of things. So what I mean by that is we see that the telephone – is coming into play, and seeing how, you know, Kara is really excited about it and trying to tell Jacob, like, hey, I think we need one of those. Our friends have one. So I'm excited for just this season to see little things like that of, you know, the era that it all takes place in, things that we take for granted. That was like, oh yeah, that's just really cool.
I totally agree. It is neat to see like that sort of wide-eyed looked over simple things that we take for granted.
Yeah. Alrighty. I am now ready for trivia.
All right, trivia, as always, this is for one part of the Dutton Rules items and merchandise available at tasteofcountrystore.com. We've added some new t-shirts in the last several months. There's a Rip-themed one, and there's a Beth one about a tornado, and then just some other great Yellowstone gear. First person to answer the question correctly gets their choice of t-shirt at tasteofcountrystore.com. And this week's question has to do with Harrison Ford's character, Jacob Dutton, and his relationship with Donald Whitfield. Former James Bond actor Timothy Dalton plays Donald Whitfield in 1923. And this is the third time that Harrison Ford has worked with a James Bond actor. Name the other two times.
I don't know, but I'm excited to learn next week.
One is very well known, I think. Part of a big franchise that Harrison Ford was in. The other one is a little more niche, but certainly a well-known movie. You got to get them both. Staff at tasteofcountry.com is the email address. And first person, like we say, to email and get that correctly will win that t-shirt.
Can I ask for a hint or no?
You can, but I don't have a hint prepared, Addison. So,
well, more like, can I give you a hint and you can just heads up or like nod or shake your head or if you want to audibly okay. say it. Okay. Does the franchise have to do with outer space?
It does not.
Oh, crap. Okay. Well, I had another one, but I'll leave the other one for other people to guess. There's one other franchise I have in the back of my head.
But one of the movies does have to do with outer space. I know. That confused you.
Staff@tasteofcountry.com, y'all. If you have the answer, you can send it there. I just gave Billy a very confused look. I thought I might have had it, but I don't. But that's okay. Because you know what I do know about? I know about season 2, episode 1 of 1923.
It was good to be back. You know, 2 years. It was just, it was like seeing old friends again. Kind of updating some people we hadn't seen in a while. A little bit of a family reunion. And it turns out your family had some really terrible things happen to them over the last couple of years.
Jacob Dutton is doing better. I mean, we left season 1 on this, not necessarily a cliffhanger. Like, he was getting better, but he wasn't well yet. And so I'm glad to see that we didn't show up and Jacob Dutton was dead. Not that that was going to be a thing, but you just never know with these shows.
Yeah, no signs of him still healing from the from that gun attack on him. And then he and takes Jack and his men into Bozeman. And their first order of business is the because the next morning is a trial. And I thought this trial pertained to Banner Creighton. You know, Banner was the one who shot up the men, and I thought we were going to revisit that courtroom. It actually had to do with Zane, who is the ranch hand. We mentioned him last week on the podcast. He was Jacob Dutton's ranch hand. And if you remember him, his wife was arrested for miscegenation at the very, very end of season 1. Plot detail that I thought was kind of shoehorned in there and totally forgot about until, well, really last week. And then now this, where they have to go to court for it.
And I do want to set up real quick what's happening at the Dutton Ranch. I know that we just talked about that it's winter is when we enter episode 1. And Kara, you hear her writing to Spencer telling her, we've had to sell off almost half their herd. Like, you can tell that they're in a little bit of a starvation mode, that winter's been really hard and things are starting to fall through the cracks. Whether that means like actual food on the table is sparse, but then also just the way that they're making a living, they're kind of having to cut some ties. So you can tell that there's a little bit of desperation in the letter that she's sending to him.
I wasn't totally positive if they had to sell off their herd because they needed the money to survive, or if they sold off that money to pay Don Whitfield back because he paid off property taxes. Kind of got some mixed messages because if in that one scene midway through the episode when Jacob's talking to the sheriff, he mentions that he paid off last year's taxes but hasn't figured out how to pay off this year's taxes. I wasn't sure if Don Whitfield is off his back or if he needs to raise more money. That was murky to me. At first I thought, oh great, they paid off Don Whitfield, but then I got to thinking about it a little bit more and thought, well, maybe he's still got the wolves at the front door.
Interesting. Okay, I definitely took it as just an imagery of that things are tough right now.
Hard times. Yeah, hard times. And you could very well be right. But either way, it's a dire situation. They got all their chips on the table waiting for Spencer to come. And they're hoping Spencer's going to be there by spring. They don't have a plan B at this point.
What I think is interesting is in this episode we see, because Whitfield, he's prevalent and he's also not a – I guess he is prevalent in this episode.
Okay, so to your end, there is some Don Whitfield. And I'm kind of making a decision at this point, and I may revisit it. Like, Don Whitfield's, like, perversions, until they're really relevant to the plot, there's just so much, like, uncomfortable television to watch. Like, I can't wrap my head and have an opinion on all of them. So I'm shoeboxing that part of the show until it's necessary.
Yeah. No, I wrote it down. I essentially there's sex trafficking involved in this first one, and I didn't understand. I wrote down on my notes, why is this prevalent? Like, why is this? I don't know.
Yeah, that's how I also felt about later in the episode, the scene between the marshal and Father Raynaud and the Native Americans they encounter. We can talk to that in a little bit. Like, it seemed like. I understand why we're getting all the Native American abuse like on screen, because that was really relevant to American history. And like, yeah, we need to see that and be aware of that and sort of face that and live with that. So like, we could talk about that a little bit more, but like the Don Whitfield, like his, what he's got going on and with the two women and their, it was just like, okay,
Yeah, just fast
forward. My wife walked away. She had to walk away during that scene. That was one of two times she walked away during this episode.
I'm curious to learn what – I don't blame her on that first one. I'm curious to learn what that second one was.
Oh, you'll know. It'll be obvious when we get there.
Let's talk about Spencer. So we find him in episode one. He's working on a ship in the engine room. Homeboy is getting into lots of fights, but he's also starting to make money from the fights.
Yeah, he's not necessarily getting into fights like his behavior's causing fights. Like people are agreeing to fight him, right? It's just like agreed upon boxing. Winner gets a good chunk of change, which seems noble in a way, I guess. You know, no one's really going to be too angry with him after getting their butt kicked by him. He gets into the first fight because he's protecting his new buddy, Luca. Luca was being sexually assaulted. Spencer stands up for him. The guy ends up getting killed, which was great. That leads to a really good scene on the deck of the ship where Luca's thinking about taking his own life. Spencer more or less talks him out of it by saying, sharing how his life still has some value. He has a mother who loves him. And this and that. I found it odd that his name was Luca. I don't know why we needed to have a second Luca in 1923, because if you remember, the tugboat captain's name was Luca.
But, people like me don't remember that, Billy.
And I guess there's four Johns, so two Lucas should, be like water off a duck's back. Luca's a pretty good character, and I know his character, it's going to be more and more important kind of as these next couple episodes. Like, he's not just... I don't think he's going to exist just within the confines of the ship, because at the end of this episode, Spencer now has the money after winning these fights you talked about, and the shoreline is in view, so it seems like Spencer's going to get to America and begin the land part of his journey. I think Luca's going to come with him. She's just nodding because she knows the answer to that.
And I'm not going to say yes or no. I'm just like, after watching episode one, I agree with you. I'm like, why set up? I mean, they just really went deep into this friendship. That why would we just get rid of this plot line, at least after the first episode? So, no, I agree with you. That's also what I thought.
I think they'll part ways at some point, because I don't remember there being a big Italian presence in like Montana or like in the Dutton life. So I think the friendship is short-lived, but I think we'll get more Luca.
Yeah.
And I forget the actor's name who plays him, who has had a few roles, but it's good. It's a good character, a good little friendship. And I think maybe it will help distract Spencer, so he's not just sort of thinking about his wife back in England and how he's going to get to her, or thinking about the revenge he needs to extract once he gets back to Montana.
Which, speaking of, should we head to Alex next, or what character should we talk about next?
We can talk about Alex. Alex is probably where we saw the most movement, and we got some questions answered. You update us on Alex and where she's at and what she reveals, and I would love to know kind of your reaction to what Alex had to say.
Well, it all opens up. She's back at home in England. She's heartbroken. She's not with Spencer. You can tell that she's quite literally whittling away. They show her room. There's food on the floor that she's not touched. Like, she's down bad. And she is in dire need of a passage to America, but her family is for sure not going to give it to her. Her friends aren't going to give it to her. She does have a friend that comes and ends up promising that she will help in, selling whatever of Alexandra's jewelry she can to, help her get this passage to America. Well, all the meanwhile, during that conversation with her friend of like, can you help me out? She reveals to her, there is a bigger reason that I have to be with Spencer. Drum roll, please. It is because Alex is pregnant.
Yes.
Mind blown. What?
Was your mind blown?
No, not necessarily. Knew, like, as she was hesitating, I was like, you're pregnant, girl. Just say it. And then she does. And I'm like, well, this is exciting. This also just adds another plot point that is going to be very interesting as you're trying to get to America, but I digress.
We suspected that she might be pregnant at the end of season one because she was thrown up on that ship.
That was good. Yeah. That was a little Easter egg that was subtle.
Yeah.
But good.
Well, less subtle was the many romps that her and Spencer had. So, like, those kinds of things happen, girl. Like, I don't
A
know
plus
what, like,
B does equal C.
They didn't have Planned Parenthood on that boat, I'm quite certain, or anywhere in Africa. Like, there wasn't a little spot to get the proper protection next to that tree out in the
forest. That scene. So yeah, essentially we end this episode with her in process to head to New York is where she's trying to make it. And then from New York, she's going to figure out her way to get to Bozeman.
All I could think was as she boarded that ship, she's like waving back at Jennifer. Jennifer was the friend. And this was the same friend that she had on that ship at the end of episode 8. She's waving to this friend saying, "I'm off on another adventure." I'm thinking, oh no, girl, you'd have no idea what you're getting yourself into on this ship. She's like in like the lower level. She's staying in the bowels of the tourist class, they call it.
That she chose. She chose this.
She did, but she is not, like, this is not going to be a good month for her. She's going to have a bad month. Next episode should be titled Alex's Bad Month, because that's what it is. like don't even be poetic, Taylor Sheridan. This is going to be her bad month.
It's like, forget being pregnant. Like, just being on a ship like that, not pregnant would be rough. And then let's add any type of already just like morning sickness. And now you're in the depths of the ship. This is no carnival cruise. Like, you're roughing it.
Okay, so previously I had a theory that Alex never gets to Montana. And I'm going to back off that just a little bit. I think I've got it figured out how this ends for Alex and Spencer.
How?
Let me ask you a question off the top, though. Do you think that there's a happy ending for these two? Do you think that ultimately they ride off into the sunset, raise babies together, live old, and die happy?
I don't think that they die happy. I think, and you can let me know if I can share this about our interview with Julia. I do think they both make it to Montana at some point. I do feel like Spencer, for whatever reason, after maybe meeting, I don't know. I don't think he's ever going to live to see the child born.
So here's what I think is going to happen. And then I'm going to explain why there's a number of things we already know that fit within this theory.
Okay.
I think to a certain degree, you're right. I think they're going to make it to Montana. I don't think Spencer's going to live to see the babies born. I also don't think Alex is going to live much past the birth. What I think is going to happen is the baby will be born and will be adopted by Jack and Elizabeth. Oh. And there's another number of reasons why this makes a lot of sense. The first of all, adoption, a big theme in the Yellowstone universe, right? They really sort of normalize it. Jacob and Kara adopted Spencer and Jack. John Dutton adopted Jamie Dutton. So that fits. Maybe Jack and Elizabeth named this baby. And they would name it John, perhaps, to honor Jack's late brother, who was killed just a year ago. Then the naming fits. Why we have that skip of Johns, and the Dabney Coleman John Dutton is not the same as Spencer's brother John Dutton. So that makes sense. Then I think about Beth Dutton. Mm-hmm. It would make a lot of sense if she was named after Elizabeth Dutton. Her grandmother or great-grandmother. I didn't exactly do the math on all of this. This theory also solves the biggest sort of family tree plot hole in, like, if Spencer's the father of this baby, then we have to have a generation skip. There has to be another generation between Spencer and who we know as John Dutton, Kevin Costner's father, like a mystery generation that we know. This solves all of that now because it's essentially Spencer's kid who then has John Dutton, aka Kevin Costner. But I think the biggest reason for all of this is Spencer and Alex, they're such star-crossed lovers. They're Romeo and Juliet. Like, everything about this love story and how, like, Taylor Sheridan delivers love stories, i.e. Elsa and Sam and Elsa and Ennis, the cowboy before them. Uh-huh. Like, it just never ends well. You cheer for these great romantic stories that always end in heartbreak. This allows it to end in heartbreak, a la Romeo and Juliet, but it also allows sort of that family tree to sort of continue through Jack and Elizabeth.
But how does Alex die?
Well, I don't know how any of them die. But, I mean, pick her poison, right? She's got to get from England to Montana, a country where she knows nothing about the wilderness. She doesn't know anything about wolves and mountain lions and like the cold and all this treachery, plus all these people trying to kill the family. Like, there's a million ways she could die.
Maybe she dies in childbirth.
She could die in childbirth. Yeah.
But that just would make sense of like then Jack and Elizabeth naming the child.
Right. And it would sort of fit in with their plot line because she now thinks she can't have kids. My wife pointed this out, that like the unspoken thing here is that gunshot she took to the abdomen made it impossible for her to have kids. Well, maybe this is her purpose, because remember, Jack has that whole speech to her about her purpose in life changing. This could change all of that and give her purpose in life to raise that kid. It would sort of bring that full circle.
Okay, that's a hot take.
I hate it.
I do too, but you brought up really valid points that I...
The part that solidified it for me was the Beth Elizabeth thing, and I forgot about that. Like, that still makes a lot of sense. Like, Beth being named after her great aunt, not as much sense. Beth being named after a great grandma or a grandma or whatever it works out to be, that makes more sense to me. I don't know. R.I.P. Spencer, R.I.P. Alex.
I'll chew on that.
Sorry to ruin your day.
I'll let you know how I feel about that later in Slack.
Staff at tasteofcountry.com if you want to respond to that theory. I know it's a big one. And if you disagree, that's fine. I mean, certainly everybody disagreed with my theory that Alex never makes it to Montana. People hated that. Like, everybody's like, they weren't mad at me. They're like, oh, if this happens, I'm never watching a Taylor Sheridan show ever again. Like, I'm turning off this show. This is garbage if he does that to us. I mean, he might not do that, but he might have another version of pain coming your way.
Right. I definitely don't think there's going to be a lack of pain.
The show doesn't end happy.
No. The character that we haven't gotten to yet is Tiona, if we want to talk about her. Jack and Elizabeth aren't as prevalent. Well.
No, they're not.
Or Kara. Essentially, we're just seeing everything is starving, essentially, because of winter. And a mountain lion ends up on the front porch. No?
Yeah, you're right. Oh, it just
Billy, you looked at me like, Addison, shut up. You're speaking to. I'm like, was that episode two? No, that was episode one. A mountain lion ends up on the front porch, and I think the biggest takeaway I took from this is John's not home. I mean, sorry, Jacob's not home. Jacob's gone, and so it's really just the women for the most part that are there. So it's Kara and it's Elizabeth, and Kara is having to defend the homestead. Like, she is having to take care of the wildlife that's coming up because they're hungry. They're looking for food. I just – in that whole scene, I was like, no, thank you. I want to live on land, and I think I'm going to – I might retract my statement. Dealing with the wildlife while my husband's not home, I don't know.
That mountain lion triggered all of my anxieties. Like, it is one of my biggest fears in life is to just – open up the front porch and for there to be a raccoon or, God forbid, a skunk on my porch looking
Billy,
at me.
Because I thought that was, oh my gosh, I thought you were going to say like a mountain lion, a raccoon or skunk. You can defend both of those. I have full confidence.
I live in Middle Tennessee. Raccoons are the skunk, are the mountain lions of the Middle Tennessee. You know what I mean? Like, I don't live in rural. Like, you're right, I can, but I don't want to. Like, it's just, it's like, I hate them. I hate them. So like seeing that mountain lion, like, oh my gosh, I started sweating. My palms were getting sweaty. Like, I hated that mountain lion scene.
You're going out in your front yard with a BB gun every morning. Are you out there?
I do. When I open up my, like at night, I open up my side door to take the trash out. I close it loud. I shuffle my feet to the trash can. Like, this is a thing. And he's got mountain lions
over that one.
Nesting on his porch. That was a terrible. I hated that. Can we not talk about it anymore?
If you promise to not talk about the potential death of two of my favorite characters.
All right, no deal. We'll talk about them online.
So Tiona,
but you know what I did like though? I thought there was some sweet scenes between Jacob and Kara. Like, I continue to love their marriage and kind of how they're still playful at an old age. Like, they don't just skip over that relationship is still sort of a living, breathing thing.
Oh, absolutely. And
sometimes when you get older couples like that, they're sort of they're simple relationships. They're presented as sort of simple relationships that just are a simple thing. And this one is more dynamic, which I really find makes the whole series much more quality.
Tiona?
She had a good day.
Well, okay. So some things I want to note is Pete Plenty Clouds. He was originally, can you remind, Who was he originally played by? And sadly, he passed away, and I'm forgetting his name all of a sudden.
Cole Brings Plenty, and it was Mo Brings Plenty's nephew, Mo from Yellowstone. His real-life nephew played Pete. He died about a year ago, so they've recast him as Jeremy. I think his name is Guana.
Guana, yeah.
Who's also native. I forget the tribe. I looked it up. He might be, I don't remember. But it was an easy fill-in for me. I didn't have any problem with that swap.
Well, why I thought that was important is because you and I had talked about, we didn't know how Taylor Sheridan was going to go about that. Like, yeah, either the character doesn't exist at large and somehow we fast forward and that little love interest doesn't exist anymore. But they didn't. They carried on with the plot that we left with.
And their love has continued to blossom, and Tiona's father has taken notice of it. And he more or less gives his blessing for them to kind of get married. He asks them to wait to marriage, and then she asked her dad if he did, and he said, no, no one does. And it didn't take 10 seconds.
She's like,
she was gone. I'm just going to go see what Pete's up to. Dad, see you later. He might need some help with the hunt. And she was gone, that girl. I'm like, all right, girl.
She's like, all right, got the green light from dad, and I'm going to run with that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And they do, and it's not much of a scene. I guess there's a lot of just sort of conversation and scene setting there between those two. I don't know if anything significant happened. Although, of course, she's going to end up pregnant because everybody always ends up pregnant the first time on these TV shows. Like, they never – you know that's coming. So we'll wait for that in episode 3.
Well, I think what's interesting is they – what I took from just this plot line with them in episode 1 is that they find themselves in Texas at the J.A. Ranch – but they don't realize that they're in Texas. Where are they supposed to be? They don't think that they're in Texas.
I couldn't recall if they were going to Wyoming or Oklahoma, but they're going to Comanche land. They're looking for the Comanches to kind of blend in amongst them.
I know that the Reverend and his men are crossing through Oklahoma. So I'm kind of, I want to say that Tiona and them are supposed to be in Oklahoma.
That could very well be, because that's where the Reverend is. And we think for a minute there that the Reverend has spotted them, but it turns out to just be a cowboy kind of coming through the J.A. Ranch, which is, as it turns out, a pretty legendary ranch. This is another one of those hat tips Taylor Sheridan likes to do to sort of the ranching heroes of the day, owned by the Goodnight family. You can look that up. There's a little interesting read there. But the Reverend and the Marshal and that third guy, whose name I don't know, he's kind of a big gumpy-looking dude.
He's just the third guy. Yes.
Yeah, he's just kind of got like a real doughy face and kind of like a dumb look on his face the whole time. I'm not sure why I'm taking so many pot shots at this poor fella.
This dumb guy, you know him?
Yeah, I think that's how he's cast as dumb guy. Dumb third guy, played by.
Poor guy.
They do come across some, and that scene, that was the other time my wife had to leave the room, is when.
That makes sense.
They attack the natives really without any provocation, and then they kill the child, which was just extra. Like, I hated that scene as much as the others. I actually, at the end of last season, I kind of thought the marshal would end up being sort of a good guy and turning on the priest, because he didn't really seem to like what the priest was doing at the boarding school. Now it just seems like they might kill each other at a certain point. So, which is fine. Good riddance to both of them. Hopefully Tiona survives it.
We'll see.
It's coming though. You know, they're not going to both live, I don't think, the priest and Tiona. So we'll see who kind of survives that. We know Tiona has to survive long enough to have a child who will then become a relative or of Thomas Rainwater, who ends up taking up. So that has to happen. That's the weird thing. I mean, we've talked about this a couple of times. Like, we know how this show ends, right? It's just the getting there.
But yeah, it's the in-betweens of who lives, who dies. How do we actually get to the end?
Not a whole lot of Banner Creighton in this episode. We saw his wife for a minute.
Other than Banner, is what we do learn is that he's really enjoying the life that comes with Whitfield, which I think is naturally going to lead to his demise. He's power hungry. He's material hungry. Yeah. It's going to lead to his demise.
But he's not dumb about who he's working with. You know, he knows Whitfield is the devil.
But he's working with him.
Right, but it might be relevant that he, cause all along we sort of suspected that Banner that figured out, like, oh, this guy's really evil. Like, now, you know, maybe that'll come, maybe they'll come to heads. I don't know how that'll work. One will kill the other or something along those lines. I got a chance to interview a couple of cast members coming up. One of them was Banner's wife from the show. So I kind of wonder if she's going to be a more significant role here soon. Mm-hmm. The other one, well, I don't want to spoil it because it's not locked down yet. But the other one is one of those niche characters that I really like.
One is that when Billy slacked me that he was going to potentially interview this guy, I immediately said, yes, take it. Mm-hmm. For if anything, just to like scratch an itch that I know you love this character.
Yeah.
And many people probably don't pay too much attention. But that's why you listen to the Dutton Rules podcast.
Yeah. I'll say his character name and you'll be like, huh? Who?
Exactly.
Oh, that guy. Whatever. But it'll be exciting for me. And it'll be an interesting interview. Mm-hmm. You got to interview two actors and you got quite a bit of time with them. Next week we're going to premiere one of those interviews, if I'm not mistaken.
Michelle Randolph and Julia Schlafer. Billy, I just want to say they're never going to listen to this podcast. But I mean, maybe. I shouldn't say never. I just want to get coffee with them. I truly enjoyed my time. And yeah, we got a good amount of time, which I was appreciative of. And I think that we got some good good info. And I appreciate – I mean, Julia was – I asked her some questions. I was like, she could answer honestly and doesn't have to give a lot of detail, or she could. And she gave us some detail, which I always just really appreciate.
It was striking to me to hear Julia's American voice, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because she's not British. She just plays one. But you could still see some of those mannerisms mm-hmm. in the way she said things if you watch the video version. And we do have clips up from her interview already up at the YouTube page, and more will mm-hmm. be coming. But you're right. She was very warm mm-hmm. And kind and generous, I thought, with her answers. And didn't – like if she couldn't answer a question because it would spoil things, she still gave you a good answer.
Yes.
Maybe in a different direction.
Yes.
But she still gave you something that you could use.
Right, which I appreciated.
Which I thought was, I mean, that's a pro move, and yeah. I really appreciated that.
It is funny though about my guy friend who listens to our podcast, he actually watched the YouTube video, and he texted me this morning. He was like, whoa, Julia's voice? ? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I was like, yeah, I didn't really take too much of a note to that, but yeah, you're right. It's just kind of like when you hear I'm losing Beth Dutton's the Kelly actress. Riley. Thank you. Kelly oh my Riley. Gosh, that's right. terrible.
It's like Kelly the reverse Riley. Of that.
Yeah, when you hear her talk, you're like, whoa, wait, what?
Yeah, and also Julia wears, I mean, obviously Alexander doesn't wear much makeup. Julia wears...
No, she's fashion forward.
Very fashion forward.
She's very fashion forward. Both her and Michelle are. But they don't play those type of characters, obviously, on 1923. They're very... Just minimalistic and no, they're very fashion forward, which is I appreciate personally.
Okay, so we have Julia coming next week on the podcast. I believe we have Michelle clips coming on Sunday on the YouTube channel, and then we'll roll that interview out soon mm-hmm. on the podcast as well. And then if it comes together, my secret surprise interview.
Staff at tasteofacountry.com is where you can, one, answer the trivia question, send in your questions, thoughts, affirmation, you know, I'll take anything. We do read them, and we always just encourage you to review, share this podcast. I'm personally pumped, and I think I can speak for you as well, Billy. We're pumped about season two, just to dive into it and what's 100%. Coming.
We do have a little Q&A this week.
Mm-hmm. I have them, a few. Alrighty. The first one is, you still have the family tree wrong. You have an extra generation inserted needlessly. Ooh, you just hit Billy where it hurts. Billy, how do you feel? Billy has spent so much time on this family tree. Billy, do you agree?
I retooled it, in fact, right for the start of this season. And I put that extra generation between Spencer and Dabney Coleman's John Dutton, assuming that Spencer has the kid who has John Dutton's senior. Now, if it ends up being an adoption scenario, like I just suggested, then that extra generation goes away. But the bottom line is here, we still don't know all of the answers. So mm-hmm. to a certain extent, all of it's speculation. I do think along the way, Taylor Sheridan has made some goofs, but totally understandable and forgivable. Like, probably didn't have this all figured out from the get-go. So, like, it's the best that we know so far, but I do stand by what it looks like based on what we know, if that makes sense. Yeah.
The next one I have for us, does Kara have a ride a horse in any episode, and does she know how? Does she have to ride a horse?
Yeah. Does Helen Mirren know how to ride a horse? And I actually looked into this a little bit too, because I hadn't, you know, we hadn't seen Kara. We've seen Harrison Ford on horseback. Mm-hmm. And I did read an interview where Helen Mirren really compliments Harrison Ford's horseback riding skills. I guess he's wonderful on horse. He's a really good equestrian, which makes a lot of sense. He's ridden horse, I think, in the Indiana Jones movies too, if I'm not mistaken. He's probably been on a horse. But I did a little research on it, and I guess Helen Mirren actually was, at one point, a really talented horseback rider. She's been on a horse. She told Art Magazine a number of years ago she's been on a horse a lot in her life, but when she signed on to 1923, she told him, no more for me on a horse.
Oh, interesting.
You know, she's of an age where I think she can say that. So we see her now during cowboy camp. She learned how to drive the buggy. Oh. So she legitimately knows how to drive the carriage, much like, if you remember, Faith Hill did, uh-huh, as Margaret Dutton. Uh-huh. She had to learn that. And that's, as it was described then, a unique skill that's equally difficult. But Helen, and even Spencer talked about how Helen, Brandon Sklinner, talked about how Helen Mirren learned how to do that, and it was fun to watch her. So I don't think we'll see Helen on horseback anytime soon.
The last one I have for us is, honestly, I think Spencer is the predecessor of John Dutton II. His knife and gun implicated that. Elsa even said only one of her brothers will live to see her children grown up.
So I know this is sort of the same question as the first one, but I wanted to include this because they mentioned a knife and gun. And I'm not sure what they're referring to. Like, does Spencer have a knife and gun somewhere that pops up later in Yellowstone franchises?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. I don't know either. So I'm curious if I missed something there. Like, he has that long gun that he's brought with him a number of times and pulled out and killed a dozen lions and 50 sharks with. Which, by the way, he seemingly has an endless supply of ammunition.
I know. It's like he never has to. I'm like, where are you getting all this?
Yeah. So maybe that pops up later, but I didn't know what she meant by the knife. I don't know. If people know exactly what he's talking about, what that person's talking about in that question, please let us know either. Well, at staff@tasteofcountry.com would be the place to do it, because, I might maybe miss something or misremembered it.
Yeah, like you said, staff@tasteofcountry.com is where you can send all that in. Well, Billy, until next time.
Yeah, I'm excited for episode 2. I know you know what's happened already. This is like, I feel like we've flipped roles now, right? You're way ahead of me versus a week ago when we talked about the season 1 recap. So I'm catching up.
But I actually like that, because I feel like I can bring a lot to the table, and I'm right here to dish out. I have already all my notes taken. I like 1923. Remember, it was 1883 that I really struggled, but I was here for it. I showed up, but I'm a little above the overachiever with 1923.
I like 1923 as long as they're not killing kids and we're not talking about.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Don Whitfield and like if I have to see Don Whitfield in a bathtub again with his pasty white arms
and his hairy chest. Man.
Come on. Like, that was the most offensive thing about all of that. Isn't that? It's like, dude, I do not want to see him naked again.
Have you ever interviewed him? I am sure he would love to hear that from you.
Yeah. Timothy Dalton. Dude, mixing some curls.
Well, on that note, y'all, the Dutton Rules Yellowstone podcast is another investigative Town Square Media podcast. We will see you next week.
See ya.